Thank you, Jack. And now is the time we've all been waiting for. Please welcome our main speaker, Kara from LA.
Fair alcoholic. By the grace of the God that I don't always understand, it is my understanding the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous great sponsorship and fellowship of women in these rooms. On Tuesday, I celebrated 21 years of continuous sobriety. Sponsor would say you're clapping for God. Well, it wasn't me, I'll tell you that. I have a sponsor. His name is Sam-O. I have a sobriety date, April 1st, 2004. I have a sponsor. His name is Sam-O. I have a home group, which is the BYOB Beverly Hills Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet Mondays at 7 p.m. If you're ever in the area, you're welcome. I have 13 sponsees, 13 grand sponsees, and 5 great grand sponsees. I have commitments at meetings. I've worked all 12 steps, and I'm in a committed relationship with 10, 11, and 12. I share that with you, not to tell you how great I am, but to tell you how absolutely batshit crazy I am. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. If you're new and you don't know what that means, I can't stay clean on yesterday's shower. I do all of those things to keep me sober one day at a time. I share that at the beginning of the meeting because my sponsor always says if no one gets anything from what you have to say, they'll at least know what you did. And that it worked. So that's what I did, and I can tell you it worked. If you don't get anything else from what I have to say, that's the most important thing. When I first got sober, an old timer in the room said to me, "Listen, this isn't a program for people who want it, because there's a lot of us who want it. And this isn't a program for people who need it, because there's sure should a lot of people who need it. This is a program for people who are willing to go any lengths to get it. So I hope that you're willing." Happy birthday to 5 years. Amazing. I also have health insurance, so shout out to the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. For the people who took chips, congratulations. And for the newcomers, welcome. I hope you are desperate. I hope that you have hit every last house on the block. I hope that no one is returning your phone calls. I hope you're out of money and out of choices. I hope you've been blessed with the gift of desperation, because if I wasn't blessed with that gift, I wouldn't be here today. If I could be anywhere else than 7 p.m. in Laguna Niguel on a Sunday, I would. It's not my first choice for how I want to spend this Sunday evening. The White Lotus season finale is on this evening. I'd like to be at home with my husband and my two dogs watching that, but I know that everything I have in my life today is a direct result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I put this program first, and it's an honor and a privilege to speak at a meeting. I want to thank Greg for asking me to speak, for letting me know that it was business casual only for the speakers, because apparently not for anybody else, but that's okay. Happy to be here. Just kidding, Greg. It's okay. I don't think you also gave me the address, but I Googled it. But shout out to Greg. And I love that when I walked into the room, I saw Ashley, who I don't know, but I know because I sponsor one of my close friends. And that's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you're sitting here and you're miserable, I want you to know that it gets better. It might not get easier, but it definitely gets better. And I like Alexa, which, by the way, that was a beautiful share. And sometimes she speaks, and I'm like, "Will you sponsor me?"
Yes.
Because it's just, this is a program of days. It's not a program of years. Celebrated 21 years on Tuesday, and it's not about 21 years. It's about the 7,670 days that I took one day at a time to get here. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous makes it very clear that we got to do this thing one day at a time. And what I have learned in my recovery is that time is not a tool. Time is not a tool. I'm so grateful for my life today. I really, truly am. When I think about the last 21 years, it's a miracle. It's a miracle that I'm even here. And so it's an honor and a privilege to drive an hour and a half here and an hour and a half home on Sunday at 7 p.m. dressed in business casual, a room full of people who went casual and share my story, my experience drinking. So like Alexa, I hate speaking at meetings, you know. I'm a taker by nature, you know. I'll take your time, I'll take your money, I'll take your peace of mind. When I was using, I take your drugs, I take your man. Women hate when I say that, but it's true, you know. I would just do whatever I could to feel better about me, because I'm always looking for an external solution to an internal problem. And so I like to take, and I typically like to sit and listen or judge, you choose the word. And being vulnerable doesn't come naturally for me. You know, I want you to like me. You know, anytime I get asked to speak, my first thought is like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to give them the best fucking share in Alcoholics Anonymous history. They're going to be calling Gray and they're going to make him the number one speaker coordinator getter for eternity, because his speakers are so amazing. I'm going to get a standing ovation. My story is going to save every newcomer in the room. It's my first thought. And my second thought, like that, you're going to suck. You're not gonna say anything that anyone relates to. You're gonna get 5 minutes in and they're gonna start packing up and walking out. I've never once ever seen anyone get booed, but in my story that centers in my mind, that's gonna happen. They're gonna fire Greg. They're gonna fire Greg. You can say he doesn't know how to get speakers. You know, because that's my alcoholism. I'm either better, the best that you've ever fucking ever seen, or I'm the absolute biggest piece of shit, worthless, don't deserve your time and attention. I don't know how to just be. That's my alcoholism. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it centers in my mind. And it talks to me in my own fucking voice. And it never tells me you're great. You're perfect just the way you are. As you are enough. It doesn't tell me that speaking is not about me. It's not about me. It's my self-centered fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to get something I want. Your approval, your adoration, your love, your attention. Or I'm going to lose something I think I have, right? A sense of self. But what I don't realize until I get to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is my worth and value doesn't change whether I'm here or out there. As I am enough. But I had to learn that in these rooms. Let me qualify for a second. I grew up in a non-alcoholic household. My parents have been married for 46 years. My mom's a Russian Jew. My dad's an Italian Catholic. Yeah, right? So you can imagine my relationship with God was mildly complicated. But I want to share the fact that neither of my parents are alcoholics. And I grew up in a really, really nice upbringing. And I share that because when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I would hear your story, I was looking for any reason to separate myself from you. And I didn't realize that what makes me an alcoholic is not what my parents were like. It's not what my mom did and my dad didn't do. That's all just information, right, that I get to uncover, discover, and discard. Like Chuck Chamberlain talks about in A New Pair of Glasses, what makes me an alcoholic is when I put alcohol into my system, I lose the ability to control and manage my drinking. So if you're new, and what I share is not your story, keep coming back. That's it. If you have the desire to stop drinking, you're in the right place. From the minute I came out of the womb, I was restless, irritable, discontent. It was my baseline. Selfish and self-seeking. You know, I had really curly hair, and my mom, like I said, is Jewish. My dad's Catholic. I went to an Episcopalian school growing up, and I just always felt maladjusted to life, right? I didn't have those words, but it was just like, your outsides did not match my insides. And so my first form of escapism was really fantasy. I mean, to this day, I can fantasize. I mean, my favorite thing to do is have a conversation with me about me. You know, I don't need your participation. I can have a conversation with you that you don't even know that you're having with me. I fill in the blanks on your part of the conversation. And like, that's where my mind goes, you know? And so growing up, I was consumed with me. It's my favorite topic. Someone asks you to speak, and I'm like, I don't really want to speak. And they're like, it's 45 minutes. I'm like, that's not enough time to talk about me. Yeah. It's like, it's never enough. And it's always too much. You know, that's my alcoholism. So I have really, really curly hair, and this is, you know, before the Dyson straightening iron. And so I would iron my hair every morning with an iron before I went to school, just so I could look all the, I lose all the guys at this point. They're like, what? Their faces glaze over. It gets better, guys. But I would iron my hair, and then just to fit in, you know, with the little Jewish, with the Episcopalian girls. And then I'd go to Hebrew school, and I'd find a toilet, and I'd dunk my hair in the toilet so it would curl up, and I would look like all the Jewish girls. Because I was just so afraid that you were going to figure me out. Just so deeply afraid that you were going to find out that I wasn't who I said I was, that I didn't feel the way I said I felt, and that you were going to feel the same way I felt about me. I was just consumed with that. And I saw the effects that alcohol produced on the people around me. You know, when my mom drank, she was just a little bit more relaxed. You know, when my dad drank, he was just a little bit more connected. So I had the obsession to drink and use before I even put alcohol in my system. I was obsessed with this idea that that drink was going to be my solution. And I planned my first drink. My mom was out of town working. I convinced my dad to take my brother on a father-son outing, just manipulative to my core. I paid off the babysitter, got alcohol. I remember exactly where I was, exactly what I was wearing, and exactly what it tastes like when it hit my lips. But more than anything, I remember the feeling that felt like this. For the first time in my life, I didn't care what you thought about me. I didn't care what I thought about me. I experienced a freedom that I did not know existed. And I knew that that was going to be the thing that got me through life. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it's fun, and then it's just fun with problems, and then it's just problems. Like, I skipped fun, and I went straight to fun with problems. Ronnie Lowenfield got in a car on the ride home and crashed into a tree. I was in great key lift, thank God. And his mom came over to the house, and I was in a blackout drinker from the jump. And she said, Kara, your parents are going to be so disappointed in you. And I said, Rhonda, fuck you. And that could have been good, but her dad was the headmaster of that Episcopalian school. Yeah. So, and I should preface this by telling you my dad was the chief of juvenile probation in El Paso, Texas. So he wasn't thrilled with my mom's an attorney. So yeah, wasn't great. But if you're anything like me, that's just stuff that gets in the way, you know, because I can pivot. I can pivot. And what that looks like is I'll just pull a geographic. Just go to a different school, figure something out. See, I'm not the problem. You're the problem. You're the problem. You're in my way. And I'm just going to figure it out. And see, my drinking and my using, it's not that exciting. We all have war stories. So I'm going to speed through the drunk log. At 14, I had my first possession charge. At 15 years old, I was crossing the border to Mexico with people I shouldn't have been with, doing things I shouldn't have been doing. At 16 years old, I was the lead witness in an attempted murder case with drugs and alcohol at the center of it. And I'm the person that just like flips, I tell, because I'm scared and shitless of what's going to happen to me. I leave, move to LA at 17 years old. I find MacArthur Park. Yeah, anyone know MacArthur Park? Okay. Yeah, found MacArthur Park. At 18 years old, I'm in psychosis, and later that year, I wake up on the bathroom floor almost dead of a drug overdose. When I get down on my knees and I pray to a God that I do not believe in, and I say the great alcoholic prayer, God, if you get me through this, I swear to God, I'll never do it again. You know, I experienced what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about is pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I crossed every invisible line that I set for myself. I did things I said I would never do. Did things that when you tell me I did them, I can't believe I did them, except for the fact that I was there. I lost all contact with that family of mine. I had no friends. I was willing to sell my body for drugs, and it ended up alone in Van Nuys, California, in a bathroom, a cold, cold bathroom. You know, and I knew that drinking and using wasn't a solution for me anymore because I knew it all was still. And I stuck true to my promise. I never drank or used again. So that's my sobriety date, April 1st, 2004. But the big book of alcoholics is very clear. talks about this thing being a three-pronged disease, right? I have a physical allergy. I have the drugs and alcohol into my system, and I lose the ability to control and manage my drinking. I have this mental obsession, which is that I tell myself lies, the greatest lie being that one day I'm going to be able to drink and use normally. And I use drugs and alcohol, and I'm looking at you guys, and I know you can relate. So if you are offended, I'm sorry, but I used drugs, alcohol, lately, and it is a part of my story. And then I have a spiritual malady, which means I have the inability to handle life on life's terms. I'm just emotionally sick. And if I'm not treating all three of those things, then I don't have sobriety. But see, I don't know that you guys exist. Where I grew up in Texas, people didn't talk about alcoholism. It's not that it didn't exist, but where I grew up was more important what it looked like than what it felt like. So now you've taken away my solution and I'm left with me. And see, what I didn't realize until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous is everywhere I go, there the fuck I am. You know? You can't fix me. He can't fix me. Money can't fix me. Job can't fix me. I gotta fix myself, reorganize myself from the inside out. But how do I do that if I don't know there's a solution? So I'm walking around Los Angeles, California, an emotional terrorist for anyone who can finds me in their path. I still have no relationship with family. I have no friends. I mean, forget being unemployable. You know, I couldn't hold down a job. And so I'm just walking around Los Angeles, and I find myself at a coffee shop. It was a coffee bean. It was a coffee bean on Sunset in Fairfax. And I'm there at Tuesday at 10 a.m. because that's where you go when you've got nothing else going on in your life. And in walks this guy. I'd never seen him before in my life. He was wearing all white. And he was drop dead gorgeous, still to this day, the most handsome man that I had ever seen. And he had something about him that was like radiating, like serenity. And he walked right up to me. I'd never seen him before. And he said, hi. I said, hi. And he asked me if I wanted to go to dinner. And I didn't have any money at that time, so it felt like a great way to get a meal. And it was really, really hot, girls, you understand. And so I said, what's the worst that can happen? And we went to dinner, and the waitress came over, and they said, do you want something to drink? And I said, oh, I don't drink. And he said, are you sober? I said, what's that? And he's like, were you an alcoholic? And I was like, whoa, feels a little personal for a first date. I don't know what that is, but I can't drink because, you know, once I drink, it kind of gets out of control, and, you know, all bets are off. And he said, oh, okay. Step one, right? I just didn't know it. And the next day he texted me and asked if I wanted to go to a meeting. And I thought, well, this is moving very quickly. I don't even know what he does for work, but sure, you know, maybe I'll get a job out of it or another free meal. And you guys, he's really, really hot. So I said, sure, I'll go. And he took me to the Four Horsemen meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is no longer there, but at the top of a Jewish community center in Long Island. And I walked in and I was like, oh, that's what's wrong with him. He's in a cult. Got it. Okay, I walked in, it's a temple. You guys are holding hands, you're chanting, you're passing a basket, you're putting money in it. And most of all, you guys were fucking happy. And I was miserable. This is before Uber. So I couldn't get out of there on my own. I don't think I had money for a cab. So I was just stuck. There was nowhere to walk to. And there was a guy by the name of Danny T speaking. And if you know Danny T, you know that he doesn't look anything like me. His story's nothing like mine. He served time in San Quentin, shot smack, dealt dope, and had a handlebar mustache, long hair, and he's in his 80s now. And nothing about him resembles anything about me except when he shared his relationship with drugs and alcohol. He said that it was his solution, and that his solution stopped working for him, and that he found Alcoholics Anonymous. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, he experienced a life beyond his wildest dreams. And for the first time in a really, really, really long time, I experienced. And I went home and I Googled Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started going to meetings all across Los Angeles. And I couldn't stand most of the meetings, and I really didn't like any of you guys. But when I was in the room, something was happening. I was hearing your story and I was thinking, well, maybe if it worked for you, it could work for me. And I was also chasing around that really hot angel. I call him my hot angel. And I was chasing him around. My sponsor later told me that's called stalking. But the 13th step works. And if you don't know what the 13th step is, ask your sponsor. It's an informal step, but hey, it works. I wouldn't recommend it, but it worked for me. I stayed sober. And I started following that guy around to meetings, and I started sitting in the rooms, and I ended up at a place called the Log Cabin. I don't know if any of you have been to Los Angeles in the years. Someone, Mike, shaking his head. Mike, right? Yeah. No, got it wrong. Remind me your name. Tim. Tomato, tomato? Tim. Tim, who's great friends with my friend Pat O. You know, Pat O, he's one of my favorite people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that's the thing here. You make friends become family. And you have relationships with people that will change your life. I love Pat. I'm so grateful for the recovery that he's gifted me. Sitting in the log cabin, and I meet a group of girls. And these girls were just like me. You know, they were my age. They were going through the same things that I was going through. And I got in with them. I got in with them. And that's the thing about this program. I mean, my path to recovery, I have been carried on the backs of women when I could not carry myself. That has been my experience. The path of my recovery has also been laid with the bodies of people who thought that they could walk outside of those rooms and come back, you know, and that's the truth. That's the truth. Bless you. You know, I heard the sneeze too. Our time isn't guaranteed. You know, I buried a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people. You know, there was a guy, an old timer, who used to say, if you're going to stay around long enough, buy a suit, buy a black dress, because you're going to go to a lot of funerals. And unfortunately, that's been my experience. But I've also been gifted with seeing people walk through immeasurable pain and immeasurable grief, hitting rock bottom and not picking up the drink and the drug. And the beauty about Alcoholics Anonymous is when you share the worst of your story and you stay sober, I know that I can't. And that's really been a gift of my recovery, is watching women go through things and men go through things that I can't imagine going through, and them staying sober, and then me thinking, okay, if they can, I can too. You know, because we do this together. It's a weed program. It's not an I program. I have my sponsees when they first, you know, get sober. I have them call three other sober sisters a day so they get used to picking up that phone. Because if you're like me, I have an allergy to being uncomfortable. I'm currently uncomfortable standing in front of you and speaking. Because I don't want to be judged. I want you to like me. I want you to know how much Alcoholics Anonymous has worked for me so that you'll stay. Me, me, me. I think about me. Right? I'm so not okay being uncomfortable. But what you guys told me is that if I take the contrary action, I can walk through that discomfort. And if I can walk through that discomfort, then I can stay sober. Because putting a drink and a drug in my body, it's only a temporary fix. Drugs and alcohol do for me very quickly what Alcoholics Anonymous does for me slowly. And if I am just willing to take the right next indicated action, I can have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And that was my experience when I fell into the log cabin and met that group of girls. And we made going to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting like we were going to the club on Friday night. You know, we would go over to each other's house, and we'd get our hair and our makeup done, and we'd borrow each other's clothes, and we'd cruise down to Rodeo, which was a big meeting on Friday nights, and we'd chase around the boys, and we got our hearts broken, and we had a great time. And I got a sponsor because you guys said I needed a sponsor, and I didn't fucking want a sponsor, but I got a sponsor because I just wanted to fit in with you guys. And she told me I needed to work the steps, and I thought, maybe this worked for you, but it's not going to work for me, but I did it anyways. You know, I was already clear on step one. I was powerless. My life had clearly become unmanageable. Step two, I don't know about God. God's caused a lot of problems in my life. And she said, well, pick something because what you're doing for yourself is going to kill you. And I said, okay. And she took me down to the ocean. You know, these old timers, they got some partnership, but they took me down to the ocean. And she asked me, well, now that I'm considered an old timer, I say long timer because old is just like, I'm not old. Hopefully when I say I celebrated 21 years, you guys think, when did you get sober? 5? I really hope so. But she took me down to the water and she said, go stop that wave. And I said, I can't stop the wave. Like, what is this old bag crazy? And she said, oh, so there is some power greater than you out there. And I was like, okay, got it. I just have to believe there's something bigger out there than me. Just gotta believe. And I became willing to believe, and I did that inventory, and I got free from the bondage of self. I saw that the common denominator in every single situation in my life was me. It all came back to me. And there's freedom in that. If I'm the problem, then I can be the solution. Like Alexa said, her relationship with her mom changed. Her mom didn't do anything different. She did. Wow. Okay. Great. And I went through the steps and I healed those relationships. I got clear with me. You know, there's a great speaker by the name of Wayne Butler. Steps 1 through 3 are the steps of desperation, right? I became so desperate that I'm willing to take these steps. 4 through 9 is about restoration. I'm restored to sanity. 10 through 12 is about transformation. And man, I transformed. I did. He started to care about you. And for someone who only thinks about me, that's a big fucking deal. You know? See, I didn't realize, like, in order to be in a relationship, I had to learn how to be a partner. I didn't realize that in order to have a job, I had to learn how to be an employee. You know, because I'm always walking into a room and I'm thinking it's about me. It's my job. It's my relationship. It's not our relationship. It's not our job. This isn't our meeting, it's my meeting. Why is the break so long? Craig also didn't tell me it was an hour and a half. You know? Did you? Oh my God, I don't think that's how it works. But regardless, right? Right, it's not our meeting, it's mine. That's the self-centered thinking. And my alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It centers in my mind. And it doesn't like wake up with me every morning and be like, hey, it's your alcoholism, I'm gonna come and fuck shit up for you today. No, I see that coming. I see that coming a mile away. It's like this. You're busy. It's Sunday night. It's the White Lotus season finale. It's an hour and a half drive where I can find someone else. Oh, that's Fonzie's calling again. Talking about that relationship she probably shouldn't be in. I need to take that call. Oh, my sponsor again. He's busy. He doesn't want to hear from me. Shit, I got to get out the door. I don't have time to hit my knees. God can wait. That gratitude list, I'll do it later. And before you know it, I separate myself from you, and then I separate myself from God, and a drink and a drug looks like the best solution. That's how my alcoholism works. It speaks to me in a whisper, and it's constantly trying to separate myself from you. It wants me alone. That's how it likes me. By myself, isolated, all alone. And that's what happened. My life got really big in Alcoholics Anonymous. Got really big. Life got good. I got a job. I ended a relationship with my parents. I became a sister to my brother. Hot Angel, you know, I wanted to make him my AA boyfriend. And he had like 13 other AA girlfriends, you know, the type. And so that didn't, you know, work out. But I found another guy. And he thought I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. And the job got busy. You know, and life got big, and I thought, yeah, you guys need to do this one day at a time, but I'm different. I'm terminally unique. I got this. Before you know it, I stopped going to meetings about Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff, except when it was time to take a cake. Now, when it's about me, or when you ask me to give you a cake. And people stopped wanting what I had, so I didn't have any sponsees anymore. And I got farther and farther away from you. And I'm here to tell you, you can burn your life down to the ground in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I got into a relationship I had no business being in. Didn't know how to be a partner, holding on to it. And, you know, I started to become someone at work that people didn't really enjoy being around. I was a follow-upper, a circling backer, a hey, just checking in on misser, like no faith. No, it's all me. I've got to drive this thing, my will, my way. And I went 180 miles into the proverbial brick wall. And everything in my life shattered. And the only thing that I didn't do was pick up a drink that drug. And I called one of those girls, one of those trudging buddies from the log cabin. And I said to me, man, I'm in a really, really bad shape. I've just burned my life to the ground. She said, okay, I'm going to pick you up and take you to a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, whoa, I don't think you heard me. I fucking burned my life to the ground. And she's like, I'll be there at 6:30. And pick me up. And she took me to Miracle Mondays on Monday night at 7:15. I don't remember anything the speaker said. I don't remember anything about his share, but got time for participation. And they said, can I see a show of hands for anyone who wanted to share? My friend raised show with me. She said, you should probably share. And I turned to her and I said, you should probably work your own program. Well, she turned back to me and she said, you should start working on your own. My hand shot up. It was a power greater than myself. And I walked to the podium and I said, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't have anything to say for myself. And I just started sobbing and I ran to the bathroom, very dramatic. You know the drill. And she followed me back there and she said, you probably saved your life tonight and you definitely saved somebody else's. Get back in the middle. It's not too late. You know, she said, hey, if you never want to go back to basics, don't stop doing the basics. Oh, interesting. You know, that hadn't occurred to me. It's like the things that I do in the beginning are the things that I do today. And those are the things that keep me sober. So I got a sponsor who had what I wanted. And they started taking me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I realized is that in uncovering, discovering, and discarding, I had become so dishonest, not with you, but with me. You know, the greatest lie that I tell myself is the one that I tell me. It's usually not the one that I tell you. It's the participation in situations that I have no business participating. It's the familiarity of the narrative that I get to decide I no longer want to participate in. It's the uncovering and discovering and discarding the wreckage of my past that sets me free from the bondage of self. That's what I started to do. And that's what reorganized me from the inside out. You know, and here's the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, like life continues to happen on life's terms. You're not going to get the job, or the guy's going to leave you, or, you know, you're not going to be able to have the kid, or mom's going to pass away, your dad's going to get sick. Like, shit happens. This isn't a guarantee that, like, life is going to become unproblematic. This is a guarantee of tools that allows me to face life's problems with spiritual fitness. And I oftentimes am able to determine how spiritually free I am by how quickly I can go from restless, irritable, and discontent to happy, joyous, and free. That's how I can tell the barometer of my recovery today. And I'll tell you a little bit of what my life looks like today. You know, that hot angel that walked me into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, he's my husband today. Yeah, and he didn't become my husband right away. We had 13 other AA girlfriends, like I told you. And, you know, I got into a different relationship. I was sure I was going to marry him. And I tried to hold on to him, you know. But if you're anything like me, I'll squeeze onto something so tightly that I'll suffocate it. And see, when I let go, life happens for me beyond my wildest dreams. And during the pandemic, our lives came back around, and we were both sober, and we were both able to be in a relationship. And today we have a relationship with Alcoholics Anonymous at the center. I sponsor a lot of women, he sponsors a lot of guys. We have the language of the heart at our core. And it's not about the relationship. But what I'm saying is, if I had painted with a brush my idea of what I wanted my life to be, I would have way underpainted the painting. It's so much better than I could have ever imagined. So I have this beautiful relationship. You know, I'm a sister that my brother can call and that my brother can trust. You know, I have 13 amazing women, one of whom you heard this evening, and a grand sponsee who came up with us and took 8 months. And I get to see the light in these women's eyes turn on. I mean, forget having the job that I love. I have a career that I'm so incredibly passionate about. And it didn't turn out the way I thought it would look. It turned out even fucking better. You know, it turned out even better. Every morning, I hit my knees and I thank my God for a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I ask that God, how can I be useful? Direct me. I was working in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. And, I was working a job where it's like, you know, everything is down to the minute. And money is at stake. And we can't go overtime. And everything needs to be done on this schedule. And one wrong move, and it could just, you know, could fuck up the entire schedule. I don't even know if you're allowed to curse in here, but everyone's casual. So, you know, I'm speaking casual. Sorry, Tim. Too late, right? We were working outside that day, and it's just out of nowhere, like thunderstorms. And we literally could not finish the job. And we had to go, and everyone's like, what the hell? Oh my God, what are we gonna do? And I was the only person in recovery on this job, and I just said, God's got a plan. And they were like, you're religious? And I was like, no, it's more of a spiritual thing. And they were like, what else could God want us to do? I mean, this is what we're out here doing. I'm like, I don't know, God has a plan. Like, let's just go back to the hotel. So we start driving back to the hotel, we pull over on the side of the road, and they're getting out the equipment, and I start walking. It's now stopped raining. Of course, and we're now, you know, walking towards the hotel, and I'm walking by myself, and I see two kids, and they're on those like Lime scooters. I don't know if we have them in Orange County, but they're on these Limes, and I pass them, and I hear, and I turn around, and this young person has gone face first into the cement. Her whole chin is sticking out of her skin. Her front teeth are completely gone. She's got blood everywhere, and her friend is standing above her. And I said, oh my God, do you have a phone? Can you call 911? And she motioned to me. He was dead. She couldn't speak. And so I was there at the exact right moment that happened so that I could call 911 and I could sit with this young person until the ambulance came, until they could get a sign language communicator on the computer to get her information. One of the crew guys walked up to me and goes, well, I guess God did have other plans for you. You know, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous. If I try to push my way and elbow my way and control and manipulate, you know, I'm gonna miss the moment of where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to miss God's will for me. You know, I often talk to my sponsees about what's the difference between my will and God's will. Well, my will is desperate. It's urgent. It's manic. You know, it's tight. I can barely breathe. I got to get it done. You know, God's will just happens. It's effortless. It's like a loose garment. It's like a breeze on a summer day. It just unfolds. But if I get in my way, I'm going to miss that. You know, and I don't know what anyone else needs to experience in order to get to the place where they can release control. But I know for me, like, I've hit that. And that is really the revelation of this sobriety for me. As my recovery grows, so does my God. You know, first it's just like, God, you know, I got to stop drinking and using. Give me the solution to do that. And now it's like, God, I need the solution to live. There's a great speaker, a guy by the name of Bob Darrell out of Las Vegas, and he always talks about it's not enough for the alcoholic just to have faith. You know, we got to have trust too. And he gives this analogy that faith is like watching a tightrope walker push a wheelbarrow over a tightrope, knowing that that person's not going to fall. That's faith. Trust is getting in the wheelbarrow. And so I think to myself every morning when I get up, like, am I in the wheelbarrow? Am I allowing God to push the wheelbarrow over the tightrope? And am I willing to just let it be whatever it's going to be? Because life isn't happening to me. It's happening fucking for me. It's happening for me. And all I have to do is very simple, just get out of the way. Kara's will doesn't work. Kara's will got me smoking crack under the 405 bridge. Okay? So how am I going to go to the brain with the problem for the brain that's got the solution? That's called insanity. Right? And I get to be free from that. And I'll wrap up with this. You know, when I was going through the amends this last time, you know, I talk about being a newcomer with time, because you can be a newcomer with time, you know. Sometimes, like when Alexa speaks, and wow, man, where did she get all that wisdom? It's because she's doing this thing one day at a time, you know. They're for sure the older statesmen that the 12 and 12 talks about that probably like Tim. They're in the meetings, they talk the talk, they walk the walk. You know, when you walk into a room and you see that he's there, you know that you're going to get some good recovery, you know, and that's great. But there's also people that all they've got is time. All they've got is time. And again, for me, that's not a tool. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are the tools that I have to use one day at a time. You know, it's not enough for me to do it 2 weeks ago. I had to do it today. So when I was going through the steps with Sam again, he said, let's do an amends to yourself. And I thought that was a novel idea. So we started to write it down, started to write my 8 step. And where had I harmed myself? Where had I put the job or the guy or the money or the this or the that in front of my recovery? Because you guys told me anything I put before my recovery, I would lose. And I saw that to be true. I mean, I lost everything. The only thing I didn't do was I didn't pick up a drink or a drug. And so we started talking about what that amends to myself would be. And we talked about how I was willing to go to any lengths, you know, for the boyfriend, the job, when I was drinking and using for that. So why wouldn't I treat my recovery the same way? You know, and I often, like, I'll meet a newcomer and they'll be like, will you sponsor me? And I'll be like, yeah, meet me at a meeting. You'd be shocked at the excuses that I hear. Oh, it's raining. It's like, I never not went to MacArthur Park because it was raining. I couldn't find parking. There wasn't a meter on that block. So I just went home. It's like, never once was I like going to the liquor store, not finding parking out front and going home without it. Like, and not ever once that occurred to me. Oh, it's a holiday. It's National Pet Dog Day, and I'm gonna, you know, take my dog on a walk or whatever the fuck that we say to ourselves to convince us that we don't need the solution, right? Because the disease of alcoholism is loud. So why wouldn't I treat my recovery the same way I would treat my alcoholism? Which is like, if it's Sunday night at 7 p.m. and I have to drive an hour and a half on the night of the finale of The White Lotus, I fucking do it. Because I know if I don't put this thing first, like, I'm toast. If I don't come out here and share my experience, strength, and hope so that the newcomer can know, hey, it works, then what am I doing? This has got to be my primary purpose. Because I know what happens if it's not. You know, every time someone goes out of that room and puts a needle in their arm or a gun to their head, they're reminding me. They're reminding me so that I don't have to go out there and have that research on my own. You know, I'm so, so, so grateful for my recovery today. If I'm not your speaker and you can't stand me, no worries. I'm in a sister program that tells me I don't have to worry about what you think of me, right? What you think about me or say about me, none of my business. But just keep coming back because your speaker is here. Your story is here. Your trudging group is here. You don't have to do this alone. I'm so, so grateful that you had me out. I'm so, so grateful that I got to hear Alexis share, that I got to watch all those people take 0 to 29 days and 30 days, remind me why it's so important that we come and we share our stories. Happy birthday to the gentleman with 5 years. So glad that you have a life today that's beyond your wildest dreams of healthcare, even though, I mean, that's debatable whether or not that's like the greatest scam of all time, but that's an outside issue, sorry. But I bought into it, I have it. Greg, thanks for asking me to share. I'm glad you didn't tell me it was an hour and a half. Or I'm just kidding. I'm so grateful for my recovery today. You guys saved my life, and I look forward to hearing from you. Okay. Thank you.